The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Joining us now, former governor of Virginia, leading candidate for president. We call him Governor McGenius because he was a great governor of Virginia. Terry McAuliffe. Hey, Governor, great to have you, man.
John, great to be back with you, buddy. How you been?
I've never been better. Happy Thanksgiving. I know you had your whole family back home, and you have your son home for a couple weeks from the Marines.
Yep.
How was he? How was Jack?
He was great. We had four of the five home. I still have one daughter overseas, but everybody was home. Jack safely back from Iraq, so we're very happy about that. And he's back out of Camp Pendleton. Loves the Marine Corps. You know, went to the Naval Academy, now in the Marine Corps, but... You know, just absolutely love serving in the military. So we're just, for every parent who has a child in a combat zone or military uniform, we're just, you know, glad everybody's safe.
So happy that he's home. And I know I've met him several times. Boy, what a fine young man. In fact, I've met all your children. They're all just great. And
they take after their mother, John.
I was going to say that, but I figured I'd let you go there. I had a chance to visit, as you know.
And Dorothy told me she saw you the other night.
Yes, former First Lady, and we had a chance to talk a little bit, and just a delightful woman, as you know. I think so highly of her. But
Well, and she's now heading up this big effort, as you know. She just was such tremendous work in Virginia to make sure that no child goes to school without access to a nutritious breakfast. And we're so successful, became a national leader, that she is now, in fact, the national spokesman for No Kid Hungry. And is really traveling around the country to show what we did in Virginia, you can do all over the country. And, you know, our test scores are up and absenteeism is down. I mean, she really, really leaned in, and very important. These kids can't learn, John, if they go to school and they're just plain hungry.
Yeah.
And you get them a nutritious meal, and it just makes a better workforce. And one of the reasons why Amazon came to Virginia is we spent, you know, 4 years building up our education system and really showing the world why we're the best state for business.
All right, we got a lot to talk about. I want to start with Amazon. You laid the table for Amazon to come to part of their headquarters, come to Northern Virginia, but it's gotten a lot of criticism on the right and the left, both extremes, saying, look, too many tax incentives. A lot of people called it corporate welfare. What say you?
Yeah, let me say, and listen, we worked hard on this. I submitted the bid in September of 17. We put in the bid for Amazon. We put a lot of work together to put that bid together. You know, the proposal had come back to me for the state to put all the bids in. I said, no, I don't want to do it that way. I said, if these communities want to be part of it, in Virginia Beach, in Richmond, Northern Virginia, they all have to contribute. The state's not putting up all the money. And listen, I want to thank those communities. They came up. They put the money up. Virginia Tech. I invited all the public universities. Virginia Tech came in. And I think it was because of that collective approach. So, you know, the bid that we put in, John, you know, as you know, we put it in, was around $1.5 billion. As you know, immediately some states like Maryland came out. They were $5 to $7 billion. Mm-hmm. Newark was 9 to 10. I always felt we were going to get it. I had known the Amazon folks for a very long time. We had successfully won the Amazon Web Services. But listen, this is going to be, I talked for 4 years about building the Virginia economy. I now say it's built with what we were just able to do with Amazon. It will help the entire state. It was very important. But let me just say, the people, this was a four-year effort. Why did we get Amazon? I say it was a four-year effort. I think, John, as you remember, we put a record amount of investment in education, $1 billion in pre-K through higher ed, $850 million of that pre-K through 12. We redesigned all of our tests. We got rid of it. We had too many tests. As you know, we're the first state in America. We adopted all new standards for computational thinking and computer science. First state to do it. First state to offer cybersecurity beginning in kindergarten. So I think for these big companies, they saw that we were serious about investing. We redesigned all of our schools. Because if you remember, John, 5 years ago when I got elected, I inherited, as you know, a $2.4 billion deficit. I'm very proud to say I left a $558 million surplus. Why? We rebuilt our economy. No more just solely reliant on the federal government defense spending. We now are number one in cyber, on data, on unmanned systems. And having Amazon now really finishes that up. We are now the Silicon Valley of the East Coast. There is no question about it. But it was a four-year effort. Who gets credit? Everybody gets credit. I want to thank the members of the General Assembly who worked on me on that historic investment in our education system. Teachers got pay raises. They hadn't had pay raises in 8 years. I had to veto a record 120 bills, John, as you know. Anti-women, anti-LGBT. Those types of bills would have precluded us from winning any.
Mm-hmm.
Apple, mm-hmm. Amazon, Google, or mm-hmm. Facebook, who all made billions of dollars of investment under
right.
my term as governor, because we're open, we're welcoming, we're investing in the future, and if you want to invest all this money, we're going to go to a state that is serious about putting together a skilled, educated, tech-savvy workforce. So I would argue to everybody, this is going to play out for a very, very long time. It was a huge win for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Credit goes to everybody. Yeah, I submitted the bid, but big deal. It was everybody stepping up to the plate, Ralph and his team, but also the Republicans in the General Assembly
right.
who literally worked with me in a bipartisan way to make historic investments in education, to make Virginia the great state that we are, got rid of our deficits, built a new economy. We are now the envy of the country today, John. I mean, we've won all of these huge. Look, number one in cyber, number one in data. This has happened in the last 4 years, and now we have a skilled workforce and an education system to continue to drive our students into high-paying jobs when they finish their education.
Well, and you were able to accomplish this in the spirit of bipartisanship. You had a 2-1 supermajority Republicans
yeah.
in the House of Delegates. Bill Howe was a speaker. He
yep.
had a supermajority for almost the whole term that you were there. Tommy Norman, the Republican, was a leader of the state Senate the whole time you were there.
Yep.
So you had to work with a Republican General Assembly,
yep.
and one of the branches with a supermajority, you got this done. So it's spirit.
Let me tell you why, John, I think we were able to do it. I'll be honest with you. Because I ran on jobs. I said, this is what I'm going to focus on. I don't think anybody in the General Assembly did not think that I was able to go out and create jobs. I did the most trade missions of any governor in American history.
True.
I went to 5 continents and 35 trade missions. And when I came into office, you've got to remember, I inherited a $2.4 billion deficit.
Right.
Now, I wasn't there for the drafting of that budget. It was done in the prior administration and pushed by the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't jump all over them for that. I said, no, let's get to work. In the month of December of 2013, when I took office, they created only 1,000 jobs in the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew if we had a good plan to build this new economy, I didn't care if the governor was a Democrat or the man from the moon, if he's got a good plan, because we need jobs in the state and we really need to redesign our entire employment sector, I'll work with him. And, you know, we didn't always agree on social issues, but John, I got 90% of my governor's bills passed with a Republican legislature because they were common sense, pro-jobs. That's what people want.
Well, Governor, I say this every day. At the end of the line politically, a job for a family is not red, it's not blue,
that's right.
it's green. And
right.
if you can provide people with a better opportunity and a better future and give
yep.
them jobs so they can take care of their families in a better way and go to a movie on the weekend, you're going to be successful.
Yep.
It doesn't really matter what letter is next to your name on
That's
the
right.
ballot. Let's talk about your political.
Let me just say one thing, John, and don't forget, every city and county in Virginia, their unemployment dropped. And in most of the rural communities, it dropped over 50%. So when I talk about them, and I really worked hard, I traveled to Japan to bring out manufacturing for Southwest Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go down to Danville or Martinville and you bring in 100, 150 jobs, that's a big deal.
Right.
So my point is, it's not only Northern Virginia and the cyber and all that, but I made sure that all of our community colleges, Danville Community College, is now a cyber center of excellence for their community college. So now, I don't care where you live in Virginia, you can get a great education and you can get a great job. I don't care if you're rural or urban, everybody benefited over the last 4 years, and that's very important.
Okay, so you're the jobs governor, and as you know, I've gotten myself a lot of criticism for backing you over this period of time. By the way, had you gotten Medicaid expansion done, you would have had another $5 billion in Virginia, but I'm not going to go there.
Another thing. I put it in my budget when I left office, and you know it was about $360 million. Of money, and this is very important, of money that the state could use if there was being spent where federal dollars would have paid for it. As you know, you and I discussed this a long time. I tried for 4 years. Unfortunately, the Speaker of the House, Bill Howell, mm-hmm. said it will never happen as long as he is Speaker, mm-hmm. as you know. Mm-hmm. The good news is he left, and we picked up 15 House of Delegates. And I'd worked before I left office to get the hospital provider tax done.
Right.
So it never would have cost the state a penny, John. And we were able to do it. And as you know, 400,000 people would have gotten health care. But we were forfeiting $2.2 billion a year. Now, I started my first business at 14. I've started dozens of companies.
Right.
You have an opportunity where I have to pay this tax money in, but you're going to give me 100% back?
Right.
The idea, John, that we did not do this, and I'm so proud of the great work that Ralph and the legislature were able to do to get this thing done. It should have been done 6 years ago. This was our money, and I structured it so that it would never touch the state budget, and it's very unfortunate. And the one thing I got to live with, John, is that there are people who are dead today because of political reasons who did not get this done. And that woman did not get the mammogram screening that she needed, even though we paid for her to get it. But that's the thing that is really bothersome. And this is what is wrong with politics today. They, you know, as I say, doesn't matter on jobs or D or R, but common sense. And look what we're doing. We've now got it done, but we should have done it 6 years ago. And those people who fought it have a moral responsibility that there are people not alive today because they played political games and they were scared of the Tea Party. And, John, that's what's wrong with politics today. Do the right thing.
You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. We're with former governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe. We call him Governor McGenius. He was a jobs governor when he was in Virginia. He's going to run for president. We're going to ask him about that in a minute. But I just want one more thing on Virginia, then I got to move on to the national scene. You were one of the most vociferous and zealous advocates of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline in Virginia. You were really the reason that it became a reality because you were steadfast in the face of a lot of criticism on the left because you said it's the right thing to do and it brings jobs. Do you regret that decision?
Yeah, I don't know if I was the most boisterous, but here's what I said as governor. I supported the Atlantic Coast Pipeline because, most importantly, I really was concerned about unemployment in our rural communities. We have lost through the decades coal, textile, furniture, tobacco, textile. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we need to replace those, John, with new manufacturing opportunities. Mm-hmm. The only way you can do it, and I can tell you, I lost two major prospects as governor, several billion-dollar projects that manufacturing that I had recruited to come to Virginia, but I could not get the energy. I could not give them the gas because we had no more future capacity in Virginia. And I don't think most people realize that. If you're going to help the Hampton Roads region, they are in dire need today of gas. So It is a capacity. But on the other hand, what I always said, most importantly, is if we're going to do it, you got to follow the regulations. We have to, A, do it the most environmentally sensitive way,
right.
And we need to protect our historical sites. So I was for it only on the first two conditions would be met. And here's the thing that I don't think people realize with the governor. There is no manner in which the governor can stop it. So you have regulations that go before the boards. Those regulations are determined by the General Assembly.
Right.
And as I always said, if Dominion comes in with a permit and they meet the regulations set out by the General Assembly, then they're going to get their permit. If they don't and it doesn't comply, then they're not going to get it. And if you don't like the process of them through the permitting, then you've got to talk to the General Assembly because they're the ones who, could you imagine me, John, as governor? They passed the regulation, the General Assembly, and I said, well, I'm not going to pay attention to those.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they sued me when I had the legal right to restore 206,000 felons the right to vote more than any governor in American history.
Mm-hmm.
I ultimately won that.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, so if we can bring the gas in, increase capacity, I can have a booming economy in Southwest and Southern Virginia and to help the Hampton Roads region, because we have no more capacity mm-hmm. today to bring any large manufacturing facility to the Commonwealth of Virginia, because we're done. And the only way we can do that is to bring in more natural gas. We are not fracking it in Virginia, contrary to what a lot of people say. It is coming in. It will be used in Virginia. A lot of people said, oh, it's going to be exported, you know, overseas. That is not the case. It's going to be used here. But it's got to be done environmentally right, and it's got to protect our historic sites. I am not for any pipeline that would do any cause harm to the environment. And that's what the regulations have to determine, and that's the process they have to go through.
Governor, how do you feel about Dominion's renewable energy solar and wind commitment after the rate freeze ended? Do you think that was the right thing for them to do?
Well, I negotiated most of that with them on the renewables. I mean, we did have a renaissance in Virginia on renewable energy. I mean, we created, John, 50,000 renewable energy jobs under my 4 years as governor. I mean, this is really, I mean, these, when I talk about helping these rural communities, these are the high-paying jobs that exist. I mean, you can do them in any part of the Commonwealth. So, you know, I've worked out a lot. I pushed Dominion hard. We had a lot of very tough meetings in the governor's office with them. I made them come up, and Molly Ward, my Secretary of Natural Resources, Angela Navarro, I mean, they did a great job. Mm-hmm. But we busted on them every single day to make them hold the commitment that, you know, we got to move in a new direction here in the beautiful Commonwealth of Virginia. And we've gone, you know, we went from 18 megawatts when I took office, as you know, John, up to thousands when I left office. So I supported 100%. These are jobs of the future. We're the first state in America. Mm-hmm. I announced to do an offshore utility scale wind farm.
Right.
That's the future.
Right.
But, you know, you got to add it to the mix. And these are all high-paying jobs. The last thing I'll say in this, you know, before I left office, we had, you know, one of the things I'm very proud of is our workforce development grants that we did. So we have 166 credentials. Mm-hmm. I had too many high-paying jobs I couldn't fill by the time I left office.
Right.
So we realigned the education system. If you would go get one of these credentials in Virginia, we, the state, will pay two-thirds of the cost. I believe, you know, I'm not for this free college for anyone. I've been very vocal. I think everybody needs to put something on the table. You got to show some incentive in the game, but we'll pay two-thirds of the cost of it. And before I left office, we had a great event in up by Wakefield, and we had, 16, 18 kids who went through this program to work on power lines.
Right.
None of them wanted to go to college, so they went and got this workforce grant. They got their credential. And, John, I was there to hand them their credential and their diploma. And every one of these kids walked off the stage with a starting job that paid $72,000.
Yes, and look,
now,
I mean,
that's transformative for people.
That is transformative, and that's why I supported your governorship and your candidacy, because it's about jobs. It's not about all these social issues that, you know, Cuccinelli was getting involved
in
and all that nonsense. And he's
John, what you do at home is your business, not mine.
Exactly. So look, now, you were the jobs governor, no question about it, and I supported you on that, as you know. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the new congresswoman from New York, is an avowed socialist. Your buddy, Tom Perez, head of the Democratic National Committee, said that she represents the future of the Democratic Party. Governor, you're a Democrat, a pro-jobs Democrat. If she's the future of the party, Governor, where does that leave you?
Well, I think, I think you just saw that in the last election where we got 8 million more votes in Congress than the Republicans. I mean, astounding. We will end up picking up 40 House seats.
That's
John.
Not my question. We've already been over that. Where does this leave Terry McAuliffe?
What was our message in the campaign? It's about health care, about jobs. So the message that I lean on every day, I believe, is the message of America, but I think it's the message of the Democratic Party. Everything I did as governor, why we were a red state 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Today we're a blue state. Why? Because you and I talked. We focused on jobs, made ourselves open and welcoming, and a really tech-savvy entrepreneurial education system and a healthy workforce. That's the message. So, but there are other people, just as in the Republican Party, people have different views. But I am steadfast, John, in my belief of where the Democratic Party has to go. I traveled to 23 states since I've left office. I went dozens and dozens of events throughout the country preaching what happened in Virginia, and this is where America has to go.
Okay, so let's get to the caravan, the 10,000 migrants there coming through Tijuana. If you were president...
Well, I think we're down to 1,000, John, aren't we?
there's 10,000 total. There's two caravans behind them.
Yeah, most of them have gone, you know.
They're gone, Governor McAuliffe. But they're gone because President Trump said you're not coming in. That's why they're leaving. But what is your plan if you're president? Do you build a wall or do you just let everybody come in?
No, it's not that simple of a choice. But first of all, the wall is a waste of time.
Why?
It's never going to happen. Let me finish. And first of all, when your buddy Trump ran, Mexico is going to pay for the wall. Let's be very clear. That was his big. And who's paying for the wall? All of the people scream, Mexico is paying for. Well, Mexico's not paying for the wall. It's a joke. First of all, we have very good border and customs folks down there. I was very unhappy, as with a son in the military, and, you know, General Dumford, General Mattis, and other, very unhappy that we sent these 5,800 troops down there. We have a very good system for our customs and border patrol. They can handle these situations. Do we need, we got to keep our border very secure. John, I'm a 100% believer in that. We got to secure that border. They do a very good job down there. We probably need to add some more administrative law judges to deal with these asylum cases and go through that. But listen, these folks are very professional. And, you know, they're able to secure the border. Sending the military in was a total waste of time, a total misuse of our military. Don't take my word for it. Take four-star generals who have been very vocal on this topic. But you got to secure the border, no question. I've always have said that. But also, John, let's be honest. We need a immigration policy in this country. Congress has kicked the can down the road way too long. They're afraid to take on the topic. Let's deal with it. Let's have a pathway to citizenship. We've got to deal with these DACA students who are, you know, are in our country today. We've got to extend that. But listen, the wall. Now, listen, what I'm very concerned about, and you know, I know he's your friend, but yesterday was so confusing. He talked to the Washington Post. Basically said, I think we might get, by the time he did the political interview, no, we're going to shut the government down over the $5 billion for the wall. Now, I can tell you this as the former governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. You shut our government down, it is devastating.
I agree with that.
To the Virginia economy.
It is the worst thing.
He should not even threaten
that. No, he shouldn't do it. Absolutely.
It chills through the defense community and everybody who does business with the defense community.
Waste of time.
But listen, Schumer had a, they had an agreement. If you remember, last year, they had an agreement on the table, and Trump walked away from it. I think Miller and the other folks inside the White House said no. He and Schumer shook hands on a deal for more border enforcement. And Trump said yes. And then, you know, I'll be honest with you, John. You know, I used to serve as the chairman of the National Governors. I would meet with the president. We would talk on immigration and health care, on infrastructure, on Virginia defense. We'd come to an agreement. 24 hours or later, without any warning, reverse course, walk away, and give you no reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I think the president is determined to get a wall. Certainly, even threatening a government shutdown is a waste of time. It isn't going to happen. And even if it, and if it does, it's a complete disaster for everybody concerned. And this is my thing.
But, John, here's the thing, guys love to play this.
Go ahead.
Listen. Why did the Democrats win? I think, A, focus, health care was by far the number one issue. And because of all the shenanigans they did of trying to replace ACA, individual mandates go away in January of next year.
Right.
He's affected the cost-sharing subsidies.
Right.
Premiums have gone up. Right. I mean, I've seen reports in Virginia when certain policies have gone up 62%. We got to stabilize it. There's no question we had to fix it. But that was what we ran on, and that's why over 8 million people came out, more voted for us than voted for Republican candidates. This immigration, this is it for him. This is the stitching that nets together and brings everything together for his politics. The politics of fear, division, his caravan with all of these criminals and racists.
Yeah, they are.
This all went on before 85% the election. Then he was totally silent.
85% of them are males without
jobs. We've got to deal with a secure border. But, John, we have a much bigger issue in our country today. I'm concerned. You saw GM, thousands of people laid off. I've been against the president on his tariff policy. You know, I differ from a lot of
The tariffs had nothing to do with the layoffs, Governor.
I was for TPP. Hillary was wrong. Bernie was wrong. Trump was wrong. Look at the success we had in Virginia when I was governor on our trade. Billions and billions of dollars. I can compete against anybody.
Yeah, but you did smart trade. Governor, you did smart trade, not dumb trade.
All 11 countries, We, United States of America, are now out. I can beat any.
Talk radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Former President George W. Bush told his dying father how much he loved him and promising that they would see each other again in heaven. Bush friend James A. Baker III recalled, and 41 said, "I love you too," and those were the last words that he ever spoke. Former President George H.W. Bush, known as 41 because he was the nation's 41st president, died Friday at his home in Houston at the age of 94. The 41st president will be honored during several private and public events in Houston and Washington before he's buried in Texas. French President Emmanuel Macron has asked for an evaluation of possible protest security measures a day after a Paris demonstration devolved into France's worst urban riot in a decade. Hours after he flew back from the G20 summit in Argentina, Macron held an emergency meeting at the presidential palace. This is SRN News.
For answers to all your insurance questions, tune in to WBOB every Tuesday from 2 to 3 p.m. for Dan the Insurance Man, your go-to guy for all your insurance needs. Hi, this is Dan Tuckman, and I've been helping people like you and making sure you're covered when life happens. If you have an insurance question, I'll help you find the answer. Life, health, auto, business, you name it. We'll even talk about claims. Don't miss Dan Tuckman the Insurance Man with me, Dan Tuckman, this and every Tuesday from 2 till 3 on AM 600 and 101.1 FM, Talk Radio, WBOB.
Don't stress over a leaky or damaged roof. Just call Perkins Express Roofing. Perkins Express Roofing is available 24/7. If you've had damage from a storm or accident, there's a good chance insurance will cover it, and Perkins Express Roofing will do all of the paperwork for you. If you're remodeling, renovating, or building a new home or building, let Perkins Express Roofing's parent company, MCM Builders, do a free estimate and show you how much they can save you. From a leak to a whole roof, Perkins Express Roofing is locally owned and operated and totally licensed and insured. Your roof is one of the most important parts of your home. Trust the professionals at Perkins Express Roofing. Call 904-525-2277 or 626-2860. Currently hiring sales reps. Equal opportunity employer. Perkins Express Roofing says, we keep you covered. 525-2277 or 626-2860. State license number CCC 133-0452.
Sean Robinson Realty has the ultimate real estate proposition for you. Own your own home. Sean Robinson Realty has likely sold or listed a property near you. If you close a home with Sean Robinson Realty, he'll give you a brand new big screen HD TV. Call 904-77-SEAN. That's 904-77-SHAWN. Sean Robinson Realty is your one stop for all of your real estate needs. Residential sales, commercial leases, or property management. Locally owned and operated by people who know your community. If you're looking to buy or sell a home or commercial property, don't waste your time. Call Sean Robinson Realty. Imagine getting a free big screen HD TV upon closing. Sean Robinson Realty will do it. Call 904-77-SEAN. That's 904-777-4296. 904-77-SEAN. Sean Robinson Realty.
The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
Let's get to Saudi Arabia. Khashoggi, you talk about jobs. Millions of dollars on the table, could be up to $450 billion. They got a memorandum of understanding. The president says, yeah, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, probably did. Anybody that follows this knows that MBS.
No question.
There's no question, okay?
No question.
They can't do anything in Saudi Arabia without MBS signing off on it.
Correct.
So whether he engineered it or signed off on it, same difference. So if you're president Saudi Arabia, do you cancel arms sales? What do you do?
You cancel the arms sales. You put very tough sanctions on them. You can't do it. But if I had the ability, I'd go over and arrest the guy and put him in jail. He ordered a team to go over and murder. I've actually seen some video, which I won't even mention on the radio, of what they did to this man. It is unbelievable, and it was ordered from the top. We cannot allow this to happen. And listen, John, you know, we are a net exporter of energy. It's not like the old days with Saudi Arabia.
Right.
It isn't. We are a net exporter of energy. We are bigger and better than Saudi Arabia. And we should not allow this little country over there who no longer can dictate to America. And for years they did. Those days are over. And when you murder somebody, I don't care where you are in the world, you should be held accountable.
When are you going to make your decision to run?
I agree with Lindsey Graham. I mean, Senator Lindsey Graham has been very tough on this. Mitch McConnell yesterday, the Senate leader, came out yesterday. This guy's a murderer. He went out and murdered, ordered this to be done, as you say. I mean, his own security team goes and does it, and they bring bone saws with them, and he doesn't know about
and
it.
And acid. Right. Look, not only did he order it, but he's incompetent. I mean, the MBS just has a history of gross incompetence and not the kind of guy you want to build an alliance with. So I'm with you on that. We also have to get out of that ridiculous civil war in Yemen, which is causing 17 million people starving to death. I mean, the whole thing is unconscionable. Now, when does Terry McAuliffe make his decision to run for the Democratic nomination for 2020 president?
Well, John, I'm seriously considering it. I have to and will make a decision the first quarter of next year.
What is your pathway? I mean, you look at Iowa, you're not going to win Iowa, right? I mean, it's just not going to happen. Then you get to New Hampshire, you got to deal with Beth Warren, you got to deal maybe with Sanders. They're kind of the hometown people, so you got to deal with them in New Hampshire. If you don't win that, now you've lost Iowa and New Hampshire. Then you go to South Carolina, 0-2. What's the McAuliffe pathway?
Well, you're making the exact argument many of my top advisors make to me, but
I'm trying to figure it out.
And you got to look at all that. You make very good, very reasoned points. Do I believe that there is room in our party for someone who pro-high jobs, all the things I talked about? You know, record amount of capital investment. I was also the most progressive governor in the history of the state. They are not mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. I think we need someone out there. I like governors. Forget about me, but, governors are CEOs. They have to balance budgets. I think governors are very important. But you've also got to look at people who have leaned in and built new economies. Because, John, our future here in America is what we did in Virginia is what, honestly, we need to do nationally and help all of those red states, that those folks in Ohio that yesterday got the pink slips. They ought to be able to move right into a new high or higher paying job. And I do think there's an opportunity for that message to go out there. And I want to make sure, and a lot of people are making promises, you know, that I just don't think are realistic. If I'm going to tell you I'm going to try and get something done, John, I'm going to try and base it on knowledge and fact. And we just can't have primaries where everybody is promising the moon without any realistic expectation that they're actually going to happen. I'd love to run. I think I'd have more fun running, John, as you probably know, than any man alive. But it's got to make sense, and I'll be honest with you. I'm having to have a serious conversation with the family, five children and a wife. I mean, this is a tough, tough decision to make, but we're actually going through it. But, you know, I do think that what we did in Virginia, turned it from a red state to a blue state, focused on diversifying, building a new economy. This is what we need in America without all the bluster and all the stuff that Trump says and, you know, and building relations with our key allies around the world.
Corey Lewandowski, Trump's Enemies, new book. He's out. He's joining us now, exposing the rats in the White House, trying to stop President Trump's agenda, taking papers off the Resolute desk. Unbelievable what has gone on in there. He calls those that joined the administration who didn't back Trump, didn't vote for Trump, thought he was going to lose and hated him, the November 9th club. And he's called those people out, didn't back the president, don't believe in him, don't believe in his agenda, don't believe in anything he's trying to do, don't even know what America First is. He wins, then they weasel their way into senior jobs out of the RNC. All that coming up, Corey Lewandowski, the book of books, got to read it. Trump's Enemies, got to buy it now. Go to B. Dalton, go to Amazon, go to wherever you want, but you got to do it, Trump's Enemies. This is a blockbuster, and if you're a Trump supporter like I am, this is almost like a biblical read. You have to read this to understand what is going on. There's a lot of books written out there. There's a lot of nonsense, a lot of people making money off them. This book, written for the right reasons, to get to the truth for what is going on inside the agencies and the effort to basically discredit and stop the president's agenda. And the fake news, well, they're going crazy today because, once again, their nonsense is being exposed by President Trump. You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Want to welcome our new listeners on our new radio station we just bought, WJFN 100.5 FM. Thanks for being with us. Richmond Goochland joining us now, Corey Lewandowski. Corey, the former campaign manager for Donald J. Trump for president, engineered his victory, the author of the book, Let Trump Be Trump. Now a new book out today, Trump's Enemies, out today. Got to go buy it, Trump's Enemies. Hey, Corey, great to have you, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, John. It's a pleasure, and it's a special day. Dave Bossie and I's new book is out today, Trump's Enemies, and I know your listeners, probably more than any of the others, understand what's at stake, and what Dave and I expose in this book are the individuals of the intelligence community who tried to stop Donald Trump from getting elected, and then those individuals who took senior positions inside the government to stop his agenda after he was elected. So it's a fascinating read, and it's a must-read for anybody who's followed politics in the last 2 years.
I'm going to start at the end and then go to the forward, if I may, Corey Lewandowski. I'm going to start at the end and ask this question. Okay, what do we do? How do we solve it?
Well, John, it's very simple. Look, it's very simple. You have to, if you're the president, bring in individuals who want to see you be successful. And look, I've talked about this a lot. There are many other presidents who've taken in their rivals, their staffs. And I look at Jim Baker, who I think was probably the best chief of staff in the history of presidents in the modern time. And he wasn't supporting his president originally. He worked for a different candidate. But when he came into the White House, he put his own agenda aside and got on the president's page. The difference now is, and when Donald Trump came to Washington, D.C., he was a change agent. He didn't know the people. So he gets stuck with people like Gary Cohn and Sean Spicer and Rob Porter and Rex Tillerson and all these individuals who not only didn't support him, but were probably either actively campaigning against him or, you know, didn't want to see him be successful. But he started to make those changes. And now he's brought Larry Kudlow in and John Bolton in and Bill Shine in. And those are the types of people that the president has to continue to bring in, the people who knew him or, more importantly, are willing to make sure that his agenda goes forth and not those individual staff agendas.
When you say those individual staff agendas, what are they really after, Corey? What do they want? Do they just want the president to fail?
No, John, they want fame and they want fortune and they want to be relevant again. And these are people who, by and large, they've tried to work hard, but then they get a phone call from, a reporter or a television station or a radio station says, hey, you know, all of a sudden we're going to make you a star. Would you come on? And they start thinking, hey, I'll take notes or I'll take things off the president's desk or I'll enrich myself any way I can. And by doing that, they put their own self-interest in front of that of the president and the country, and that's really what has hurt this administration in the first 2 years.
What would you trace this back to? I mean, the first bad move the president made after winning on election night, the first personnel decision he made, can you trace this back to its embryonic stage?
Well, look, let me say this, John. During the transition, you know, Reince Priebus got selected to be the chief of staff and was put in a very difficult position. But I'll tell you this. I think the morale in the White House under Reince Priebus was better than the morale under General John Kelly. I'll tell you that. That's where it is right now. You know, as much as things were bad in the first 7 months, I would speculate they're probably worse now than they were then.
In the book, you've outlined a number of people that are no longer with the administration, Gary Cohn, Sean Spicer being a couple of them, also Rob Porter. Is there anyone in there now that keeps you up at night? Anybody right now that you know is in the West Wing that you know in your soul is working against, Corey, the president's America First agenda?
Look, I think there are people who continue to serve in the West Wing at some of the highest levels of the government who don't want to see him be successful, who think it is their job to protect the American people from the president, who have a fundamentally different view of the world than the president does. Some of those people are in, you know, logistics divisions at the White House that, you know, decide who gets on airplanes and who doesn't get on planes, which planes get to be used, which staff gets access to the White House. And, you know, you see the pettiness of some of the people in that building all the time, trying to control their fiefdom so that they can keep their finger on the pulse of what they think is important. And that's not serving the president well, and it's not serving the American people well.
Corey, is the political office of the president, as we go into 2020, successful, or do they need a makeover?
Look, I think I think by and large, you know, they have done what they can, but the decisions from the political office have not always been respected at the top of the food chain. And I know that there are people in the political office who, like I do, think that it is better when the president is on the road campaigning, like he was last night for Cindy Hyde-Smith. He is better when he is out in front of the American people, when he is talking directly to the American people. But there are people who think that, you know, they should keep the president either in the residence or behind the Resolute desk and not addressing the American people directly. And that is a decision that I think has fundamentally flawed the outcome of the midterm elections. And while this president got on the road and did everything he could to help Senate candidates and congressional candidates from September forward, you know, as you know, John, I had argued for a long time that I thought the president should be very systematic of being on the road, you know, whether it's once a month or twice a month, traveling around the country and reminding the people directly of the success that his first 2 years of this presidency have had. And there are people in the building, and I don't think it's the political shop, that who make the final scheduling decisions, who, you know, just thought that that was a bad idea, and we've paid the consequences now by losing what seems to be 38 seats in the House, when we probably could have really limited that had the president had the opportunity over a sustained period of time to be on the road traveling more.
Well, look, there were at least of those 38 seats that we lost, so many of them were by a percentage or two, almost half of them under 3%. The president, if he went to some of those CD districts, probably would have saved 10 seats. You'd probably be looking at 28, 29, certainly not 37. So that was a mistake there in judgment. And, you know, a lot of these people operate in fear. Well, if we send the president to a certain congressional district and they lose, that looks bad. Well, when you go into 15 of them, you're going to lose some of them, right? It's just part of the math. So I never really got that decision. And, you know, I think that was one of the mistakes that were made in there. But look, let's go to chief of staff, and I'm going to mince no words. When you get into a reelection campaign, Corey, and you know this is going to be tough, Trump 2020, no question, especially with the new round of GM layoffs, and I'm going to get into that in a minute. Reagan going into 1984, as you said, he had James Baker. Nobody would argue with James Baker's political acumen, I don't think, of the world. Obama had Rahm Emanuel going into, 2012. The president has General Kelly, great guy, served his country, great Marine, no political instincts. You got to make a move there, right?
Well, look, I think if you look at Jim Baker and you look at Rahm Emanuel, they were political in nature, okay? They, by their very core, understood politics. And I think it's my position that every first-term president wants a second term. And that leadership for that second term starts with the chief of staff. And I think it's fair to say that General Kelly has served his country very admirably, but he does not have the skill sets that traditional chiefs of staff have when it comes to politics for a first-term president. And I think it's going to be up to the president to decide if he wants to go into the 2020 cycle with a policy and procedure chief of staff, or if he wants to make a change and have a chief of staff much more in line with the Rahm Emanuel model or the Jim Baker model, which is one focused on politics. And that's a decision only the president can make, but I think he's going to make that decision soon.
So do you have a candidate for that?
You know, I don't, and it's not up for me. It's not for me to decide. It is for who the president best feels is going to help him be successful the next 2 years dealing with the Democratic Congress, which is a significant factor in the subpoenas that are surely going to come from that, and who is going to make sure that his White House runs in the manner that he wants it to run, and that includes making sure he has access to all of the information he needs prior to making decisions. So you know, I want this president to be as successful as possible. His policies in the first 2 years have helped everyday Americans become more successful, richer, and more secure, and we want to make sure that that continues. So this president's going to decide, you know, I would think, in the very near future, which staff members are coming and which ones are leaving. And that's also true of the cabinet, and that's a very natural progression after a first-term election.
You know what I like about Shine from Fox News? When was the last time you've seen Shine on TV or grabbing any headlines? Do you remember? Never.
Look, I've never seen Bill Shine do a formal interview. I think Bill Shine is the type of man who does not need to prove himself. He has already done that. He was the CEO, president and CEO of a large major network. And now he's there for the right reasons, which is to support the president to get his agenda done. And when I look at the Bill Shine hires of the world, I look at the Larry Kudlows, the John Boltons. Those are the types of individuals who've already had a very significant career. And they are in the administration simply to forward the president's agenda. They need more people like that in the building.
Corey, yesterday, Mia Love from Utah, losing congressional candidate, had a press conference in which she did two things. I just want to get your comment on it. Number one, she blasted the president, said that his relationship with her was transactional, and she blamed part of her defeat on him, although she didn't embrace his agenda. So I don't know what he had to do with it. And secondly, basically, she whined about the Democrats spending several million dollars in her district, defeating her with fake ads, which is part of politics. What did you make of that?
Well, look, ActBlue is very real. It's the Democrats' arm that goes and funnels money into congressional candidates. We've seen this now across the country, and the Republicans need to do something to combat that massive influx of money, which is going to targeted congressional districts, particularly late in the race. That being said, you know, John, as I look around the country, the candidates that ran away from Donald Trump, many of them lost. The candidates that ran to Donald Trump, many of them won. You know, you can go and look at Andy Barr's seat in Kentucky, a very competitive seat that he asked the president to come down and campaign for him, and he won. You know, look at the Georgia governor's race, look at the Ohio governor's race, look at the North Dakota and South Dakota races. They're one for governor and one for U.S. Senate. All of those embrace the Trump-Pence agenda. Look at the Florida races, where the president was asked to come and campaign, his candidates by and large were winning, and those candidates that ran away from the Trump agenda had to be they had to answer at the ballot box, and many of them lost because of that.
Well, look at one example of that is Georgia's sixth Tom Price's old seed, Karen Handel, that won this special, a never Trumper. This district has been Republican since its inception. This was Newt Gingrich's seat back in the day, then Tom Price's. Handel got beat by an underfunded candidate and ran totally away from the president, right? Just another example. The Republican Party that they want or had or whatever it is, it's gone. Why don't they grasp this?
Well, John, what people have to understand is that when you run on the president's agenda, which is lower taxes, less regulation, more money for the middle class, the highest number of people employed in the history of our country, the lowest unemployment rate for African Americans and Hispanic Americans ever recorded, that's a winning message. When you run on a message of putting America first and making sure that we have a sovereign nation and sovereign borders, that's a winning message. If you don't like the president's rhetoric, you know, that's one thing that you can disagree with the way he delivers the message. Mm-hmm. But to disagree on what he has done for this country, I don't understand it, because he has governed exactly as he said he was going to, which is more conservative than Ronald Reagan has or any president in modern history.
Let's get to one of the biggest risks here, which is the 114,000 layoffs announced yesterday by General Motors in states that Trump won. And remember, one of the key promises made here is that the president was going to protect these jobs. GM still making cars in China, laying off 115,000 people, 75 of them in Ohio and that area. What can be done there?
Well, look, what we have to do is we have to have tougher trade deals. There's no question about it. We have to make sure that we're putting American jobs first. And we've seen it, unfortunately, for too long that our politicians made bad trade deals, and we're still recovering from those. Look, this president's been in office for less than 2 years. He's been in office for about 22 months now. It'll be 2 years come January, and he's bringing the economy back. But the decisions that these companies are making were in the works for years, and this president has now put together a pro-business environment that is giving people and companies the opportunity to grow again. But a number of the decisions that were made that they have to announce now were made years ago before he came in, when our economy was growing at 1.2 and 1.3%.
Right.
So we have to continue to make sure that we're growing our economy, people are back to work, and we are competitive in the marketplace.
There are Trump supporters that worked on the campaign that are in various agencies who I talk to all the time. I got to tell you, Corey, many of them are just, they hate their jobs. They stay there because they're trying to do the right thing. But they say that the bureaucracy, the career agency people treat them like absolute crap, and they hate their jobs just because they're a Trump appointee. Many of them tune into my show every day. What message do you have for them?
Look, here's what I have. I would say this. The bureaucrats win when we quit, right? And so they know that they have a mentality. They own the government, and we rent the government. They're there for their longevity, 20, 30, 40 years. We can go and do some great things, but we can't do it if the people who are fighting on the Trump agenda give up. Trump never gives up. I ask you to hang on. And look, draining the swamp is a very difficult thing to do. It has been full for a long time. And having a president that comes to Washington, D.C., with people who want to change, fundamentally change the way the system works, is not an easy thing to do. So it will take time. But those appointees need to stay there and to continue to fight for the president's agenda, because it is too easy for the bureaucrats to stop us at every turn by using subversion and bureaucracy and the slow roll of things. And by doing that, they do a disservice to the American people.
Final question, Corey, for the new people coming into the administration. How do we not repeat the same mistake? Is there somebody vetting these people that didn't happen the other time? I mean, obviously, we had the November 9th Club. All these people got in, didn't believe in the agenda, undermined the president. Now we're going to have an influx of new people. Who's in charge of making those decisions?
Well, John, I'll tell you, in my new book, Trump's Enemies, what we talk about are the people who really believe in the president. And I think the team is getting stronger and better every day. And I think what you're going to see in a very short order is additional changes, both at the cabinet level and at some senior staff levels. And that is going to allow the people who I think are truly supporting the president's agenda to be in positions to make recommendations on who should be hired, make sure the right people are there, and then vetting those people properly. Because right now, I don't think they've done a very, very good job of that. And it takes, you know, it takes a lot of work to find the right people who want to serve within the government. But I think when change comes, it's good, and it's a fresh start for everyone.
Does there need to be changes in the president's West Wing communications department?
You know, I don't know. I'll tell you, the work that Bill Shine has done over there, I think, is very admirable. He's still building a team. Can there always be improvements? Of course. But I have full faith in Bill Shine to put together the right team to represent the president in forward-facing communications in everything he does. So I'll leave that to Bill.
Have we outed the leakers?
I don't think we've done them all yet, but we're working on it.
All right. Corey Lewandowski, we're out of time. I really want to thank you for being here with us. Trump's Enemies, you can buy it. Anyway, it's out today. You got to go get it. Get your copy now. Pre-order. You can go to Amazon, B. Dalton Bookstore, any bookstore you want, or your favorite book ordering company. Just go online. Trump's Enemies, this is a absolute must-buy. Now, if you buy a book on time and you can get it to me, well, I have my studio in Corey's house, so we can get him to sign it for you. Just get it over to me at the studio, and I know you'll sign it when I see him there. So be sure and do that. Got to buy this book. This is the must-read book. If you support the president and his agenda and you're concerned about 2020 in any way, this is the read you have to do, plus perfect gift for Christmas. Don't forget that. Trump's Enemies. Corey Lewandowski and Dave Bossie. Hey, Corey, thanks for being with us, man.